And then there'll be a time for questions and some activities. Super. So, next slide, please, Genevieve. Thank you. So this is the triangle that we often use in speech and language to explain how language develops. Obviously, we do this naturally, so we're not thinking about this process. But it starts in this pre-verbal stage. So before the child's saying anything, they're learning attention and listening skills, turn-taking skills, cause and effect. And actually, it's through that process that they build up their attention and listening skills to be able to sustain their attention for a longer period of time. And then through play, they're learning language. Then they start to understand the language that they're using. And then they start to use it. So it's just this is the typical development anyway, that they would understand language before they use it. And then right at the top there, we've got the speech sounds. Often as a speech therapist, people come to you with like speech sound problems. Many people think, oh, the speech therapist just works on speech. But actually what we're concerned with before is all the other things. Because if we have any of these elements missing out, that's going to cause problems at that top stage. So someone might say, oh, they can't say the s, but actually, can they even hear the s? Okay, next one, please, Genevieve. So, attention and listening. I said from birth, but actually, it starts from before birth. So even when the baby is in the womb, it can actually hear voices and sounds, and the research shows that they are familiar with certain sounds. And as many of you know, from I think it's the seventh month, they can hear you. And I just thought there was this nice little Bible verse there of us just seeing it in scripture. When John the Baptist was with inside his mum and next to Mary, he leapt for joy in the womb. So now we've got 4D imaging. We can actually see like children smiling. But I think it's really cool that God put it in scripture so many thousands of years ago, and it's like now that we can see it. But yeah, listening to different languages when they're in the womb, the research shows that they can hear the difference between the different languages even before the baby's born. So if you know any pregnant ladies, if you are pregnant, then keep talking to your child. Next one, please, Genevieve. So here, just thinking about attention and listening, okay, so that's one of those first stages. And this is kind of typical development and how the attention span can kind of go down. So actually, 100% attention, they say, it's just like for 5 minutes. So even as I'm speaking to you here, I need to keep thinking of things every few minutes to try and re-engage you. I always feel like I want to send this to maybe like pastors and teachers so they know that we need to be re-engaged. And just how quickly kind of it does go down. So at 30 minutes, actually, we're at a really low capacity. And just that verse from John there, my sheep hear my voice and I know them and they follow me. And actually the difference between hearing and listening. And here we see the link between hearing and knowing, but it's only through the listening in between. Because we can hear that something's going on. Maybe right now I can hear the conversation that's happening in Chinese. I obviously don't understand it, and that's a language thing. But if I was to listen in, I could try and see if could I hear the specific words that they're saying. So you've got hearing, but then you've got listening, which is sustaining that hearing for a longer period to be able to understand. And as we see there, that's how God knows us, through that hearing and listening process. Okay, next one, please, Genevieve. Thanks. So really, what speech and language is about in terms of communication is giving and receiving messages. So we've got a baby in the room, and they're making some sounds. And even earlier, I saw some people, they heard the baby crying, and they thought about what message it might have been. Can anyone think what message the baby might be conveying from crying? Hungry, yep. Someone said, are they hungry? What do you think they said next? Say it again for me. Tired, yep. Could be tired. Is it nap time? Diaper, yep. And someone said, where's mum? Where's mum? You know, is that what they're doing? And in the early stages, the baby is just making these sounds, these movements. There's, you know, they don't know what they're doing. But what happens is, through the giving and receiving of messages, as maybe the baby starts, so if you're holding baby, which I saw many of you doing earlier, and maybe they start making a little cry, then maybe first you start moving them in different positions. Maybe they're uncomfortable. And so they start to build that association that when they're crying, their needs are getting met by doing certain things. And we know then they go through the stages of cooing, so they'll be making sounds, and then babbling. One thing we do get is a kind of red flag for if they do have speech and language difficulties is if they don't babble. So babbling is a really important process in learning to speak. And so after, I think maybe research shows there's a certain amount of time that a dummy can be useful, but actually if that dummy's away, they get to just practice making their sounds as much as possible, which will help them to build the associations between the sounds they're making and what they're communicating. So it's a process of giving and receiving messages. And that is kind of speech and language throughout. Next one, please, Genevieve. So communication, the ability to say the right thing at the right time in the right way. So it's involving the sending of messages. And that's really hard, isn't it? The right thing, the right time, in the right way. And typically, we do learn this naturally through interactions with people. And now I've got a little video. This is of a program that I saw growing up. It's called Pingu. Now, you're not going to hear many words, but what I want you to do is think about what are they using that aren't words to communicate with each other. What kind of, how did you see messages being conveyed there that weren't using words? Hand movements, yep. Facial expressions, yep. What facial expressions did you see and what did they mean? Surprise, yeah. When his beak kind of got bigger, maybe. Mouth, yeah. Frustration, yeah. So how could you tell frustration? Chasing, yep, definitely. So there's those quick movements. What about the volume when they were angry? Was it quiet or was it loud? Yep. Calm down, yeah. So how could you tell they were calm? Using their hands slowly. Yeah, it wasn't those quick movements. And it sounded quite melodic, didn't it? The way that they were talking, the kind of what looked like grandparents maybe. So whilst we think about the words that we use, it's also really, really important that communication is actually to do with our nonverbal communication. So what we're doing with our body, what we're doing with our voice. If I said to you, you know, so nice to meet you, but I'm not smiling, I don't know whether many of you would believe that it was really nice to meet you. And so when we're working with children, and this is for adults too, so a lot of this stuff you'll see, I know adults that don't do that, is actually encouraging this kind of communication. One thing we didn't talk about here was eye contact, which is again really, really important for communication. If I wasn't looking at you right now and was kind of talking to you from here, it's a lot harder for you to stay engaged, know that I care. It's actually by giving you all eye contact, it's that reminder that I want to talk to you, I'm ready to talk to you. And that's when you can see, obviously, now I'm just speaking to you, but when I'm doing question and answers, I obviously pause, and then I wait. Children need to learn those skills of waiting and how they can take turns and looking for those cues. And I'm sure I've heard many of you saying, Mummy's talking right now, like, don't interrupt me. And the child learns the association. One thing I forgot to say from before as well, as children are learning those associations with the messages, it's really important for babies. That's why movements are exaggerated. So, wow, it's so nice to see you. Because the child needs it exaggerated in order to learn that association. So sometimes people think, why do you have to be over the top with children? But it's because they need that to learn. Okay, thanks, Genevieve. Okay. Now, if there's one thing I want you to take more than anything else from this talk today is the importance of play, playing with your child. And that can be from any age, from baby to a teenager. Even as adults, play, you know, it causes really happy hormones inside of us. Play, it literally stops It creates hormones which are anti-cancerous. You know, if we can have fun, we're going to learn things much more. So here we've got different types of play. So actually, play isn't just one-dimensional, but there are lots of different elements to it. So first, they have exploratory play, where they're putting it in their mouths. And a lot of the time, people think, oh, why is the baby putting that in their mouth, and they don't get it. But actually, they're exploring. What is this thing that I've found? They're making sense of what's around them. They don't know what a hairbrush is when you hand them a hairbrush. They have to make the associations. And then physically playing, and that, you know, is also going to build other skills. Constructing things, playing with large dolls, which mimic what we are as humans. Small doll real play, you know, having situations which are like adult situations, but in a child format, so that they can practice and explore, and then pretend play. If you could go to the next slide, please, Genevieve. And so as they do this, it's kind of like a puzzle piece that's being added. So actually the first puzzle piece is, I don't know why they're written in a different order, but number 6 there. So they're putting it in their mouth, and they're just trying to work out, what is this thing? And then they start playing with their hair, and they start thinking about, okay, what do I use this one brush thing for? And as they're feeling it, as they're building up all of these different puzzle pieces for maybe different ways, maybe seeing an adult use it, seeing it used on an animal. And then they start hearing the word brush and knowing what to picture in their minds of what a brush might be. And then they can finally get to the point of saying brush and using it at the right time, in the right way, with the right thing. So, and this is why children will play with toys multiple amounts of times and grab different objects many, many times, because they're building up those associations. And I thought this was a really good Bible verse to put in here. If your children ask for a fish, would you give them a snake instead? Or if your children ask for an egg, would you give them a scorpion? Now, I'm sure many of you think about that. You know, when your child asks you for a certain thing, are you going to give them the opposite thing? If you did that, they'd never be able to learn the association that word means that thing that you're saying. So when we're consistent, when we allow them to go through these play stages, they gradually build up all of these associations to know how to use something in the right way. Next one, please, Genevieve. So there you've got some small doll play. You've got playing in the sandpit. That's also good for different senses. You know, you're feeling different textures. And there we've got, like, pretending to be at a fruit stall. They get to explore what it's like. And obviously, they're watching that. And you see that, don't you? When you take them somewhere and the child comes home and then they start trying to reenact it. Maybe it's you cleaning or you feeding a baby. There you've got them pretending to be doctor, you know, which is really good as well for just helping them understand what's going to happen when they go to the doctors, so they're not as scared, if they can do it in that playful, safe format. Next one, please, Genevieve. Okay, so how is language part of everything we do? So as I said, it starts with play. As you play with what you like, what you enjoy, you start to learn the words that are associated with those toys, as obviously an adult models that language to you. And then in order to socialize, you know, if you just stayed silently on your tables here, You wouldn't be able to socialize with the people. You have to use words as well as the nonverbal, because it would be a bit weird if it was just nonverbal, unless it was because you speak different languages. That's okay. And so they need to learn the words. They need to know when you meet someone, you say, hello, how are you? And to learn those patterns of communication. In order to be able to express their emotions, they need to understand what words mean, what words they can use. I am happy, I'm sad. And I'll talk about this a bit more later, but that's where you as the adults can model that language, maybe even when you're going through certain emotions. So maybe you're driving in the car and someone cuts in front of you and you go, ah, and then you go, mommy's angry right now. Or maybe something bad happens and Maybe you're crying. Maybe you're a bit sad and saying, Mummy's a bit sad right now. You know, maybe Mummy needs a hug. Can you give Mummy a hug? I'm often doing that to my sister on WhatsApp when I see she's sad, and I say to the baby, I'm like, can you give Mummy a hug now? Can you give Mummy a hug? And he does, which is amazing. We can do this from millions of miles away. We need to know words as we're thinking. So need to know and process the words to be able to retain them in our mind. And then that moves on to problem solving. Problem solving involves more cognitive skills of retaining information in your mind and then manipulating it. And behavior is a really big one for speech and language, because if, as you would see with your children, when they are not able to talk, then they will use their body. So they really need to learn the words to be able to behave. And what is behavior telling you? Actually, behavior is that communication. What is the message that being sent from the behavior that they're exhibiting? And so all of these skills then lead to being able to learn, but we need all of them in place for them to be able to learn more language and access what maths is, to be able to read, to be able to write. So yeah, speech, that's just an example of how speech and language really does just go throughout all development. Okay, thanks, Genevieve. So one thing that's really, really helpful to remember when you're communicating is to try and limit the amount of questions that you ask. And as adults, we often want to do that, like, oh, I want to show off, how much does my child know? But actually, asking a question puts pressure. If I said to one of you right now and asked you a question, I think you'd probably be a bit startled and a bit anxious. And actually, that's what it can be like for the children when we constantly ask them questions. So one way to try and help us is we can think about, for every question, we can do something that would help develop their language. So we could comment. Maybe we could say, oh, wow, that's a big car. We could repeat it. They say, car. And we just say, car. And we repeat it back to them. We could expand it. Yes, fast car. Okay, so maybe add one or two words. So we start where they are and add one or two. Or explain it. Yes, this blue car is a Ferrari. I wouldn't know that, but most of the older children do. So just one thing to think about when you're playing activities. And this is something we could even practice later. We could maybe get some toys out. But yeah, limiting questions and thinking about how can we expand their language. Super, thanks, Genevieve. Okay, so this kind of goes a bit more into the skills that are needed for developing language. So the nice, easy thing is what comes in can come out. So I spoke before about having good eyesight and good hearing. If the child does have hearing problems, then obviously they're not going to be able to hear and learn words to be able to say them. So one of the first things a speech therapist will do, if you're ever concerned, is they'll say, have they had a recent hearing test? Just to check that that's not an issue. And it may be that if your child had lots of ear infections when growing up, that could have affected their hearing as well. So maybe when they were born, it was fine, but there's been things that have happened since then. So within that, they've got to listen and attend. Remember that pyramid going up. And what languages they are hearing. People often say, oh, I'll stop speaking a language, but they'll still expect their child to learn that language. But if a child's not hearing a language, they're simply not going to learn it. And actually, when children are born, there is no limit to how many languages they can learn. Literally no limit whatsoever. So children are born, we are born as multilingual geniuses, which is incredible. So whilst I said input, output, there are some stages that happen in the middle. So actually being able to remember what's said, sometimes processing difficulties. Some people just think more quickly than other people. I'm someone that doesn't think very quickly. My brother and my mother speak and process really quick, but I can't. I just take a bit more time. And that's okay. We're all different and we're all unique. And where some of us have difficulties in other areas, like, we'll have strengths in others too. And so whilst we go through that process of taking the language in, manipulating it in our brain, then we can understand it and express it. But there could be problems at any stage. So in terms of thinking about the order of how language translates to reading and writing, what's really important is that you have to listen to the language and speak it before reading and writing. And sometimes even in governments, they get this wrong and they push reading and writing, but they forget that we can only read and write what we can say and hear. So just remembering, actually, how much is my child hearing? How much am I reading to them, you know? So it's great. It's really great to read with your children. And again, reading with your child from birth is fantastic. Having joint attention, looking at a book, it's one way of building that up. And it's how they can hear certain vocabulary. There's some vocabulary they can only hear through reading. But making sure that they are hearing lots and saying it before reading and writing them. Now I've got a quiz. Yay! So, got some different questions. If you think they're true, you can give me a thumbs up. If you think they're false, you can give me thumbs down. So, the first one. So, children should not have a specific speech and language assessment before 5 years of age because they can't be assessed until they can hold a conversation with you. Do we think it's true or false? Got lots of thumbs down. Yep, you're right. It is a thumbs down. So we would be expecting children to be having conversations, and actually under 5 years of age, there's lots we can do as speech and language therapists. The brain is really flexible under 5 years, and even if a child has difficulties, there's lots we can do to try and change that through the interactions. So if your child is younger than that and you're worried, it's good to speak to a speech therapist as quickly as possible. Okay, next one. So stuttering in very young children is likely to be outgrown by 4 years of age and should not be addressed with therapy. Therapy will draw attention to the problem and make it worse. There is some differing in the literature on this. So children are most likely to stammer between 2 and 5 years of age, which is when they're starting to try to talk. And whilst they might not have speech therapy to work on their stammer at this age, it is good to speak to a speech therapist and find out, are there things that would make it likely that this child would continue to stammer? But there are lots of differences in research and in terms of how to deal with stammers. My favorite way is to work around the child. So if they are stammering, what situations are they stammering? Is it when you're asking them questions? So try to limit questions. And the hope is that the child would naturally then stop stammering if you can identify times when they are. And it might be if they're struggling with certain speech sounds that they could be worked on, which could help as well. Okay, next one. It's not unusual for children at age 3 to have difficulty with some speech sounds. However, speech should be understandable to most people, both familiar and unfamiliar. So what do we think? Age 3. Should I be able to understand them at age 3? See some mixture, lots of false. Actually, it's true. Yeah, so at age 3, they might still have some problems with some speech sounds, but we should be able to understand them. Okay, next one. If a child has moved to this country and are new to learning in English, if they're in an English environment, their parents should be encouraged to speak English with them at home and stop speaking their home language. I can see lots of hands down. Fantastic. Yeah, no. We would encourage you to keep speaking your languages with your children at home. So, because a child's building up the languages, if they're hearing both, you know, or say they've never heard English, you know, they're making this big pyramid of their learning, and if we take away that by stopping speaking it, they've just lost a massive, massive load of skills. So we would encourage you to keep speaking your language at home with them, the language that you're most confident with, and they can introduce English, and if they want to learn English, that's great. They'll learn English best if they can still hear that language, because then they can build on both of them. Okay, next one. Okay, around 7 to 10% of children starting school have speech, language, and communication needs. So that's about 2 in every classroom. So this one's from a statistics in England, which, yeah, true, that we would expect at least 2. If it's an area where there are other difficulties, it could be 50%. So, you know, when I go to a school and they tell me, we've got no children with speech and language problems, I know statistically they will. And at the school I'm currently working at, I can definitely see that. Okay, next one. So 60 to 80% of 7 to 14-year-olds with serious behavior problems have a language impairment. Not many hands up for this one, a few. It's a sad but true statistic. It's actually taken from Australia. They went into prisons, and actually those in prison have been found to have, 60 to 80%. So again, like coming back to even now, the fact that you're here and listening to what speech and language development should look like for children. You know, if we can work on this and develop their speech and language while they're still children, hopefully we can prevent people from being misdiagnosed as having behavioral problems and ending up potentially in prison or difficult circumstances. Next one. If a child is making consistent mistakes learning English as a second language, they need speech and language therapy. Can see some thumbs down, some thumbs up. So this one is false. So, and we'll talk about that. If they are making mistakes, why are they making those mistakes? And working out, is it okay for them to make those mistakes? But they definitely don't need speech and language therapy just if they're struggling to learn English by itself. I think that's the last one. So, yeah, children with speech and language are likely to experience difficulties in all aspects of learning. Obviously, it says in there in the classroom, but I know some of the homeschool, but just in the curriculum. So struggling with science, struggling with English, struggling with maths. And within that, there might be, I would say, I know in England, some of the vocabulary has got really, really difficult. So it's making it harder and harder to remember things to do with maths. They might understand the concept of percentage, but the word percentage is hard for them to understand or remember. Okay, next slide, please, Genevieve. So what we've spoken about, some ways in which we can see that a child might have speech and language difficulties. Often it is those aggressive, those loud children, which I'm seeing at the school I'm in this week. I was looking at children, and the ones who are causing behavioral problems are the ones they're like, oh, we think there might be someone with that. But then they tell me there's a child who's 5 years old, not talking, but they're just quiet and they kind of get overlooked. So they could be someone who's like maybe being silly in class because that's a way of gaining attention. They could be acting out, pushing people again. They don't have the language, or they might be really quiet, really withdrawn. Maybe you'd describe them as very shy. They might have a limited vocabulary. Maybe they find it hard to say a word and they say thing all the time, or they make up words. That's a really good clue for me. If a child is making up a word, they'll see, what's a funny one that I've heard? I don't know, I saw an anchor and they just call it like a sea thing, but you know, they know it's for a boat, but they just can't remember the actual word. So if they are making up words. Awesome, next slide. So this is a really simple and small exercise, but I spoke before about teaching them emotional vocabulary, and there's a whole program called Zones of Regulation, which talks about how you can manage your emotions, learn to recognize them, manage them. It's actually created by a speech therapist and occupational therapist. But what you can essentially do is kind of put emotions into like 4 main categories. So you've got the blue zone, the green zone, the yellow zone, and the red zone, which has been nicely mapped onto the film Inside Out. Many of you know that film. So the blue zone would be when you have less energy. So it could be when you're sad, when you're sick, when you're tired, you're bored, moving slowly. Then you've got the green zone, when you're happy, calm, feeling okay, focused, you're ready to learn, the one that teachers most likely like you to be in. The yellow zones, you've got a bit more energy. could be excited, could be worried, like a loss of some control. And then you've got the red zone, when you're like mad or angry, lots of energy, could be yelling, could be hitting, out of control. There you can see anger there, just raging. And the important thing to note is that none of these are bad emotions. We know they're all good, but again, communication the right way, at the right time, at the right place. And so we can teach children these emotions as we're experiencing them. If you know your children probably better than anyone, when you spot certain emotions, you can say to them, I think you're feeling this. I know I hate it if someone tells me how I'm feeling, but saying, maybe you're feeling like this. And so I've got a little activity now. In your pack, there's one which is called Zones Across the Day. So this is just one for you as well, as you think about how different things can affect you. You can do it together. You can grab a pen. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you, we're going to have a... Okay, you don't have another one. Okay. And if not, you could turn around some of the other pieces of paper and you could just do lines going up and down. Okay, great. Share. And what we're going to do is we're going to experience an interesting day together. So we've got the four zones along the left-hand side. And we're going to complete it independently if we can. Okay, so next slide, please, Genevieve. Okay, so the first thing that happens is you wake up. So which zone are you in when you wake up? In the first box, yep. You can go up or down. So first you've got, are you in the blue zone? Are you feeling tired? Are you in the yellow zone? Yay, I've woken up. Are you in the... Sorry, green zone. Are you in the yellow zone? Maybe you're feeling anxious. Do you feel anxious at the start of the day? Or do you wake up in a really bad mood? Mm-hmm. Sure. Could you just take it a step back, Genevieve? Okay, so if you can see here. So at the end. Oh, right. Okay, sure. If you could go back just another one. Okay. So there are the four zones. So have a look at the different words. So it kind of goes through energy levels. So the blue would be the least amount of energy. The red would be the highest amount of energy. This is a very basic, I would normally spend like an hour just on this, but good one for those of you with teenagers. And for ourselves, I think. I use this a lot with adults. Do we think we're familiar? So wait, and I'll go through the day. Next, yep. Say that again for me. Yeah, I'll go back onto that. Okay, so Genevieve, could you go on two for us? Fantastic. So next you have a shower. How are you feeling after your shower? Do you enjoy the shower experience? Are you in the green zone or are you in the red zone? Okay, then you have some breakfast. Where are you when you have breakfast? Then you get in the car and you get into some traffic. Do you stay calm when you're in the traffic? Can you put on some music or do you get mad? Okay, then you arrive at work or where your meeting is and you prepare the day with your team or your family. Then the song Thriller comes on. Do you like it? Thriller, do, 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 do. How do you feel? Do you like that song? Are you able to ignore it? Does it make you really excited? Do you get up and start dancing? Okay, then it's lunchtime. Are you excited for lunch? Are you stressed because you have to make lunch or because you have to go out for lunch? Then your child is in an argument with another child and crying and saying the other child hit them. I don't know what the mo means. Your child gets in an argument. How are you feeling? Maybe you've got four kids and you're just like not bothered at all. Okay, then maybe it's time to pick up kids from school. How are you feeling? Are you excited to see your children? Are you feeling tired already? Yeah, that tough 3 p.m. slot. Okay, then you go to the supermarket. You need to get some food. So you're going shopping. Are you excited to go shopping? Are you not excited to go shopping? And then you start queuing up to pay and someone pushes in front of you. Do you get angry that someone's pushed in front of you? Do you think, oh, it's fine? They don't understand what a queue is. Okay, then you go home and you're cooking a meal. After you've cleaned the meal, you clean and you tidy up. How do you feel cleaning and tidying up? Are you happy? The kids are in bed? Or are you just tired? You've got another thing to do. And then it's evening downtime. How are you feeling? So maybe have a look if you're happy to share with the people in your table and just say how, like, what made you go up? What made you go down? What was it that was modifying? How did you react to stuff? Have a chat. Hopefully you found that interesting. Were your graphs the same or different? Were they the same, your graphs? Different? We're all different, but talking through those emotions with your children can be really, really helpful. You know, because children learn how to deal with their emotions a lot from how their parents do. Okay, so we're a bit pressed for time, so I'm just going to quickly go to some milestones for you of what we'd expect at different ages. So we talked right at the beginning about those early stages. So at 3 months, we'd expect the kind of gooing, the cooing and the gurgling. 6 months, babbling. Generally, at 1 year, we would expect one word. And then at, you've got 18 months there, we've got between 5 and 40. Massive differences. So we generally say age 1 word, age 2 words, age 3 kind of 3 words, they're starting to make sentences, and 4 they're 2,000 words, 5 they're really being able to kind of start to identify sounds. So that's our main gauge. If a child's at 1.5 and not kind of making any sounds, that's when I'd be worried. I'd also be looking at what are they understanding. So even if they can't speak, can I tell they're understanding certain things? And you can come and chat to me about specific children afterwards, that's fine. Okay, next one please, Genevieve. So these are the kind of sounds that we'd be expecting. So first, p, m, b, h, w. Those are the first ones, kind of 1 to 2 years. 2 to 3, we've got the k, the g, the f, t, d, n, y. And then 3 to 4 years, that l, s, those sounds where you've kind of got two sounds together, ch, sh, z. Now, this is based on the English language. There will be some variations in every language, so I'm not familiar with all of the sounds in every language. 4 to 5 years, it says they're all speech sounds, but, I mean, where there's maybe clusters together, you've got st, sw, str, three sounds together. You know, really, I mean, I'd say by 8 years, everything would be perfect. But those are some milestones. And then if you just go down to the red flags, Genevieve. Okay, so what would we be most concerned about with language development? So if they've got difficulties learning both languages. So if your child is speaking Chinese really well, but struggling in English, I wouldn't be as worried. If they can speak, if Chinese is their first language, then I'm not going to be worried. But if there are difficulties, they're struggling in Chinese and they're struggling in English, that's when to be a bit more worried. We already said if they're 3 and you're not understanding them, you know, even though we say not to compare children, it is useful for developmental reasons, gauging if they're slower than their peers. Also, are they inconsistent in their errors? Sometimes they do one thing, sometimes they do something else. That's something that could mean they've got problems. Are they struggling to interact with children of the same age? Because that might show that they don't have the communication skills ready. They're not sending and receiving those messages well enough. Also, do they have difficulties using language in routines that they do all the time? We would expect language to be really good when you're doing the things you always do, going to the same places, maybe when it's nighttime saying goodnight, if they're playing with a certain toy. So that's when we'd be most worried. I'm going to stop there. We've got time. I'll be around. I've got some resources down here that kind of look more at social skills, which we haven't talked about more. But obviously that process of sending and receiving messages in the right way, at the right time, the right place. Something that a lot of children need some help with. Adults need help with it too. So feel free to come and have a look. They're my only copies, so just if you can leave them here, but have a look through them. I'm happy to chat about any concerns you've got with speech or language. Hope that you've learned something from today. If anything, play with your child. You know, they will remember the words when you're playing with them much more than if you weren't. And maybe I'll just pray for God to help us as we do this. Father God, I thank you that you made us, and you understand speech and language in ways that we could only dream of. And Father, I just pray that you would help everyone here as they interact with babies, children, teenagers, other adults. Would you just help us by your Holy Spirit to be able to interact in ways that would develop communication? Would you help us to send and receive messages well? And just pray your blessing over everyone here. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks so much. There's still some there's still some snacks. I think Vicky's going to be taking some people back on a bus. So maybe pop to the loo if you need to. But yeah, thanks for coming, and God bless you all.